In the short while since we started this show, we have interviewed many major figures from big, consequential political parties and movements across South Africa. And every single time we release one of these interviews, the comments and DMs flood in on TikTok and Twitter and Instagram and YouTube, and even probably on Facebook, although I, as somebody under the age of 50 who doesn't use Facebook Marketplace, would not know if we've received any messages on Facebook at all, since I don't think I've been on Facebook since before the pandemic, maybe. But basically, every single time we release an interview, we get a flood of comments and DMs requesting that we interview the fighters, the Red Berets, the economic freedom fighters. People have been frothing at the idea of us interviewing them and really digging into their policies and proposals for the country. And we've been trying. We are interested in speaking with everybody. We want to speak with everybody who has managed to amass a decent following and has a voice and a degree of power over the way that this country is governed. And there have been calls and there have been DMs and hopeful WhatsApp messages that got blue ticked. But finally, just recently, the EFF reached out to us. And that's why this is our exclusive interview with the economic freedom fighters, is Naledi Chirwa. You may have known Naledi from when she first came to prominence as one of the leading Fees Must Fall activists at Tuks University, the University of Pretoria. After that, she joined the economic freedom fighters and became one of the youngest members of parliament in South Africa's history. She was in her 20s when she became an MP. And now for this election, she is the head of communications for the EFF's campaign to win the province of Gauteng. And in this interview, we spoke about everything the EFF is currently doing and what they want to do, what they aim to do should they win a national election. We spoke about land and what they mean by the state becoming custodians of the land and ending private property. We spoke about these claims that the EFF have made that they can make millions of jobs almost instantly should they be elected. We spoke about their relationship with big business and whether or not big business is afraid of or disliking of the EFF. We spoke about how the EFF funds its enormous operation, because they certainly aren't telling us where the money is coming from. It's not being declared. And so we want to know as a country. And we spoke about why the EFF keeps going into partnership with the ANC in local governments when they spend so much of their airtime elsewhere trying to criticize the ANC and remove the African National Congress from power. Why then do they keep forming alliances with the ANC and keeping the ANC in power across the country? This is The Issue with Naledi Chirwa and the EFF. This is The Issue with Dan Corder, because we all know that South Africa is a movie. Welcome to the watch party. South Africa is wild and overwhelming, and on this show we explain, analyze, and understand the biggest news stories and issues facing this country every single week. Two episodes of The Issue come out every single week on podcast and also in video form on YouTube, and we also release weekly exclusive episodes of interviews and analysis on Patreon. Go find us there. Lastly, if you're new here and enjoy the episode, it would be so wonderful if you clicked subscribe or follow. It makes a huge difference as we develop the show going forward. Right, let's get into it. Naledi Chirwa, I've been following you for such a long time, not in person in a weird way, on Twitter, which we will still call it because we're adults. And it's ours. It's not Elon's.
That X thing doesn't apply.
It doesn't matter. I had such a funny moment the one day on air, because, you know, when you see an ex as a white person in South Africa, you're like, and I was like, I don't think that's what Elon wants us to call this, but it would be funny. Anyway, you are on The Issue, which means that I will be offering you beanies. You're under no obligation to wear them, but there are many. You can pick your color.
Let me see.
Is the load shedding one, anti-Eskom.
Oh, shout out.
You can turn on the light.
I think I want that one.
Is it? Let me give you all your options. So there's purple. There's also one which just says vote in large letters.
Yeah, that's yellow. That's too yellow
and
for my liking.
Greens. Do you want the load shedding one, the purple one?
I want the load shedding one.
There we go.
Because we're running with that tag this year.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. What are you running with?
It's our land and jobs now. Stop load shedding.
That's good.
So this is
spot on.
An ode to the EFF for 2024.
Okay, good. Well, you can turn on the lights if you want, maybe later.
Yeah, let me do it now. Is it on?
One more time. Well done.
Yes.
Bright like a diamond, like Rihanna said. So just before we start, what is your current position in the EFF that you'll be doing for this election?
Yeah, currently I'm serving as the communications, head of communications in the EFF Gauteng. So those are my responsibilities during the duration of the election. period. And really just being a ground force as well, you know, because we have to be multifaceted as well and really give everything we have to the organization. It's a very crucial time. You know, we need all hands on deck. Activists of the EFF, we're all on the same page on what needs to happen and we're committed to it. And then Parliament is still continuing as well.
Just for you who don't know, if you don't know, Naledi Chadwa is 30 and a member of Parliament, one of the youngest ever. She basically left Fees Must Fall as her graduation straight into MP, which is crazy.
Yeah, it really is. The EFF is actually very bold, hey?
Yeah, I wouldn't have given you the
keys. Very, very bold. They just took
at that people age.
You take that girl, you put her in Parliament.
Epic.
And that's really powerful that they are doing that. It really shows that, like, It's a very powerful force of showing trust on young people. You know, they don't just say it. We don't just say we believe in young people. Even this year, I was saying we need more young people in Parliament. We need 60% that are young in Parliament from the EFF, you know. So I'm happy that that's the position that we're in the political party that I found a home in, that we see young people, we affirm young people, and we are young people.
Is Parliament fun?
It's not.
Why is that? Is it a little bit too much like an old age home?
It really is like the curse of being young, you know, because you want things to happen quite fast.
Totally.
And you get really intolerant of how slow paced the environment is. And then you also get really disgruntled to see how when things they want to happen, when they want them to happen, they happen quite fast.
Mm-hmm.
But when we have to deal with issues that are affecting our people, then there's a slow pacedness that comes and engulfs us. You know, like when we're talking about 24-hour clinics, then there's, oh no, we need a feasibility study.
Mm.
We need this and this and that. When we're talking about scrapping student debt, then there's more issues that are being brought up and the process gets stalled even further. But when it's things that need to, if they need to impeach a judge, they impeach it today.
Yeah.
They don't waste time. They do it right now. And they get, and it shows you the power of Parliament as well, and that it's not being maximized to its full capacity currently, and that needs to be fixed.
So why do you think that people should vote EFF, particularly in Gauteng and nationally in 2024?
We need our land and jobs now. I was doing a community meeting in Mountain City, one of the occupation programs that the EFF led in 2018. And it really is devastating to see how young people are destitute, desperate, and almost hopeless with their current situation. Unemployment really is a big deal. It's a big deal. And it's now it spreads across different levels, right? So even graduates are facing the same reality. Even doctors, there are 800 doctors who are unemployed in the country right now. So the issue of unemployment is the one thing that I know the EFF is able to respond to cogently because of what we are proposing to the people, especially in Gauteng. When we speak about industrialization, we place it in the districts that we want to do it at. So when we speak about, for instance, the housing company, the state-owned housing company, we're going to place it where it needs to be placed. When we speak about automobiles and creating all that part of industrialization, we're going to say in Kezina. That's where we want to go to address that issue. So that issue of unemployment and land, obviously, because there are some people who are not necessarily looking for jobs, but looking to expand their own opportunities, and they can't do that. Even a small thing like a salon can't open a salon without land.
Sure.
You know, and we want the state to be custodian of the land because that's the only time that we can be protected as a people. And it's like with water. The water is owned by the state and nobody has a problem with that.
Right.
And we don't have issues of not having access to water and unless if maybe it's like a failure on the on the side of the government, like with maintenance issues like we see in Hammanskraal and stuff like that. And that should be the same idea, principle that's applied to the land, to the minerals as well of the country. The state must be custodian of the country, of the land.
So two huge topics there. I'll just start with unemployment. I think Julius Malema in your guys' national manifesto launch in Moses Mabhida a few weeks ago said that he could create, or the EFF would create something like 9 million jobs instantly. And then I went and read the manifesto and there's lots of things. There's like nationalizing mines, there's creating enormous infrastructural projects, hiring lots and lots of people, doubling the social grants for South Africans.
Yes.
I must admit it sounded very expensive.
Of course. I mean, that's why we also have the part on talking about the fiscal policy of how we're going to fund these things.
So explain that. How would the EFF,
so for example, part of what we apply in the fiscal policy of how we're going to fundraise money or how we're going to make money to be able to support our programs is the issue of getting rid of illicit financial flows.
Okay.
And the tax erosion base.
Okay.
Right? So those are part of the things, because we've seen over the years of how much money gets out of the country that isn't accounted for, mm-hmm. how much money gets lost in corporate tax.
Okay.
That isn't accounted for. And we have to deal with those particular things to fund our particular programs that we yes. present as well.
Do you
so
also
there's different
see...
other, there's different and various other ways that we propose in the fiscal policy. Right. And I'm happy you're saying you read the manifesto as well. Because then you start getting a picture
yeah.
of how the EFF is looking to build this country. And even investors mm. are able to have a picture of how this is also going to benefit them.
Yes.
You know, when we talk about the issue of employment and creating jobs, when we're talking about special economic zones. So even you as an investor, you start seeing yourself from the perspective of the EFF and not what you've been hearing on Twitter, but you actually start seeing the tangible plan of yes. making things happen, both as a person who's sitting at home, who's unemployed, and also as an investor who seeks to invest in the country.
So a lot of the policy proposals within the EFF's manifesto says that South Africans should be in control of our food production. We should be providing something like 100% of the food to all feeding schemes and
yeah,
schools.
Yeah, yeah.
We
yeah.
should, like, 80 to 100% of the food in our supermarkets should be coming from
Absolutely.
South Africa.
Absolutely.
The problem, as some people identified, is yeah. that there are international flows of food production that yeah. make food cheap. And there are certain foods that can't be made yeah. or grown at cost-effective price in South Africa.
Yeah.
That sounds like food would just get more expensive under the EFF.
I mean, it's also with no, it's not necessarily what that means. What mm-hmm. it means is that we've made the laws simpler for imports to happen.
Okay.
Right? And what we need to do is to subsidize and invest in local issues, in local products. Localization has to take place even in different industries. An okay. example I'll give is the issue of poultry, mm. right? So we've got poultry farmers. They're there in their numbers. Black women especially are even entering that industry quite a lot, right? But the system makes it easier for the outside world to come in and sell their products than it does for the inside.
Sure.
And now to level, to make the playing field equal, mm. you need to bring in your own people as well, because where are we going to sell our chickens if you don't sell them to each other?
I totally agree with you.
And so, obviously, when the demand is coming in from imports mm. and it's in a magnitude number, then it becomes cheaper. It's mm. it's logic. Like if I'm going to buy in bulk 1,000 T-shirts, mm. you're going to probably give me a 10% discount.
Sure.
I'm just saying, like, the application of that logic in the practical sense, mm. right? As opposed to buying one T-shirt or 3 T-shirts, then the price becomes higher.
Yes.
It's supply and demand. It's that concept. And we are putting that into practice, but also to benefit us internally, locally, domestically as well.
So you won't be banning imports. You'll just be funding,
subsidizing.
No, we can't,
because we've got relations with other countries as well. And we want to build relations. I mean, we're talking about intra-trade in the African African continent as well. That's part of what we propose on internationalism, right?
Sure.
We want to propose easier trade rules and regulations in the African continent to boost our economy as a continent, because we've also highlighted and seen how traumatic it is for a country to just be succeeding alone,
sure.
or to be sustainable alone, or to be sufficient, just sufficient alone, because everybody then wants to flock there,
no, you're
because
right.
there's no opportunities. And it's not even an issue of countries. Even us in South Africa, in our own country as well, people in the Eastern Cape move to Gauteng because there aren't enough economic opportunities in the Eastern Cape.
Mm.
So we all go to these cosmopolitan areas. It's regardless of where in the continent you are, you want to go to where there's more choice, there's more opportunities to be economically active, especially young people. You won't sit and suffer in poverty. And we want that sort of opportunity for the entire continent.
Mm, I understand. Mm. So much of what the ANC has done in the last 30 years has been trying to build RDP houses, or a lot of water and
yeah.
sanitation, electricity, and, you know, create job, kind of like creativity climate in South Africa.
Yeah.
And one problem that we've seen, I guess, in governments all around the world, no matter whether you're a democracy or, you know, alleged first world or third world,
yeah.
is that inefficiencies happen within government. I know they also happen within private.
Sure.
But, you know, South Africa is one of the most endemically corrupt places in the world. I
yes.
imagine the EFF would
yes.
say something like, well, we have enough money to do everything we want if
yeah.
we just stop corruption.
Yeah.
But if what you're proposing is, let's basically put the whole country on the government payroll in one way or another,
yeah.
how are you going to stop and root out corruption and inefficiencies?
It comes with transparency. It's one of our cardinal pillars as well. open and transparency. Every process must be opened up to the public to be able to peruse and to be able to be involved. So civil society, that's why we want young people to be involved in processes of politics. Mm. So they are in the know of what is going on, because that extends even beyond just knowing a political party's manifesto. It goes into being active even in the most immediate. Like, for instance, there's the issue of the 18 children who died at Umthambeka in Thembisa in a classroom, right?
So now there's going to be
now there's going to be a tendering process.
I see.
And we're saying the SGB is not in the know on what's going on. The school parents are not in the know. The children's parents are not in the know what's going on. So transparency becomes a very pivotal point of sustaining the issue of rooting out corruption.
I understand.
And second to that, even rooting out outsourcing is part and parcel of that gift. Because now, with outsourcing, with outsourcing, right, with tenderpreneurship, people utilize those opportunities to maximize their own pockets. And then the people who suffer on the ground are our workers, right?
So how get, will the EFF do it
you'll
differently?
You'll get insourcing.
Okay.
Insourcing and creating state-owned companies.
Yeah,
so
I
instead
saw in
of, instead of instead of tendering out a tender to build a road, the state already owns an infrastructural company that is capacitated. The state already owns a concrete company. The state already owns a housing company. These are developments, especially infrastructural development, is always going to be ongoing, because we need to fix schools, we need to fix clinics, we need to fix hospitals.
So would the private sector not be able to bid on nor participate in any government business?
The priority is to strengthen state capacity, to build state capacity.
But
that is the primary thing, because that benefits the people.
Absolutely. But will the private sector?
It will, because there's a private sector who requires the private sector services.
Okay.
There's private schools who need the private sector to build their own schools.
Okay.
There's private hospitals as well who need the private sector to build their own schools.
So if.
But when it pertains to the state,
yes,
the state must be able to carry its own responsibility without relying on the private sector, because what that builds or what that creates is a private sector that bullies the state.
Okay.
And the private sector is able to compromise the people, because the people rely on the private sector and not the state.
Do you think they're doing that now?
Yes, that is the case. And another dangerous thing that's happening currently is that we're moving into an era of privatizing everything, right? Of giving the private sector much more power than it should have. We saw with the privatization of SAA and the likes, and we are seeing even with the intentional, you know, mangling.
Yes.
I don't know. Is that the correct English word?
I don't know what you're about to say.
Meddling.
Meddling with?
Yes. With private, with public entities.
Okay.
Like, or Transnet,
yes,
right? Where the entity is literally being thrown to the ground and being compromised so that it can be privatized.
But that's not necessarily, oh, wait, hold on. So you're saying that the government is willfully ruining it so they can sell it.
Yes.
Okay, that's
same issue with Eskom, but not just in the case of private entities, of public entities, right? But we're also seeing this in things that we are having in revolutionary conduct and language being turned around, but to serve the interests of the capitals in the public sector and the private sector. An example I'll give you is this. So we're speaking about expropriation of land without compensation, right? And then the ANC comes with a bill and says it's the expropriation bill. And that particular bill actually speaks to private ownership, which is even more dangerous, because it means an Elon Musk can come from wherever he comes from and buy the whole of Tshwane, because we will sell it to him, because we own the land as individuals. So even the state sovereignty is put under threat if that is the case. And that's why we advocate for state custodianship as well.
For sure.
Because there should be no particular person who has a lot of money who's going to exploit the current circumstances of our people to take our land. That's why we're here to begin with.
Okay, I would love to get to land in just a second. I just want to finish on, because essentially what you as the EFF are saying is that the state needs to take even more responsibility for the welfare of its people than it currently does.
Absolutely.
Double the social grants, employ many people, fund many people's businesses and the rest. But unfortunately, what we've seen in South Africa is when the admittedly ANC government is given trust over the organs of state, they loot and they corrupt and they destroy it. Why should South Africans trust the EFF with even more power over their lives than the ANC has been trusted when that has gone so wrong?
Yes, and that's an important question, right? Particularly because That is what we're trying to demonstrate and are demonstrating currently. If you look at the work of our MMCs, they're even stealing some of our ideas because of how good they are and how good they are implemented. Like with the Vumacam agreement and arrangement in Johannesburg under Ukomisa Dr. Mgcine Tshwaku, who's the MMC of safety, right, in crime prevention. And they are seeing that that particular thing is working, not only just to root out crime and to prevent crime, but to be able to follow up on cases of crime because the city is lit up and is camera-vised. Right? It's camera-vised, right? And over and above that, just yesterday, our MMC of Water and Sanitation in Ukuruleni just launched ama backup generators for the water reservoirs in Tsakani, in Primrose and Sunward Park, if I'm not mistaken, right? Which means that during load shedding, when our people, you know, load shedding also affects water.
Yes, it does.
I don't know if you've picked that up.
No, I mean,
the people of Ukuruleni won't have that problem anymore because the EFF exists.
Okay.
Right? So we've displayed ways in which you can put the trust in the EFF. This is how we are able to govern. This is how we want to govern. But over and above that, we can't even compare Mbuyiseni Ndlozi, Komsa Mbuyiseni Ndlozi and Panyaza Lesufi. The difference is so stark.
Okay, let's get to Gauteng in a second.
Yes.
Because you're saying so many
things. Yes, but what I'm actually asking me, how are we going to trust?
That's true.
Right? You look at the track record of Panyaza Lesufi. You look at him from when he was the MEC of basic education. You look at the infrastructural decays that were happening in the public sector. You look at the public sector and township schools right now today.
Sure.
You look at rural schools. You look at informal settlements. And then you ask me, is this what you want to trust?
I understand.
Over what the EFF has done in just a short period of time. So now we're not looking at feelings. You know, people want to approach politics from a perspective of feelings. We're not talking about relationships here. We're not talking about Mjol. We're talking about the governance of the country.
Sure.
So the people have the power. It's like you're an employer as the people.
Mm.
You're an employer. So if you have a spaza shop, then, and I keep stealing tin fish every day. Every day I steal tin fish and toilet paper. And will you not get rid of me?
But the concern is, because the EFF has gone into local government coalition with the ANC.
There's no coalition between the EFF and the ANC.
Okay, fine. Partnership.
You may call it that, but it's not a coalition because it's not entered to an agreement.
I mean, we can choose the words, but the reason why the EFF and the ANC are governing in a variety of places is because they have a partnership and alliance. I don't really care what the official
I'll tell you
is.
Why.
But to use your analogy,
if
like somebody is stealing from your shop constantly
and
then they can no longer steal anymore because they're not popular enough in this case, but then they get a friend of theirs to like watch the door so they can continue ransacking cities, that's a problem. Like,
so who's watching the door in this analogy?
I will explain again. But basically, most people vote for the EFF as well as all the other minority and opposition parties because they're dissatisfied with the ANC. And a lot of the EFF's rhetoric over the years has been, kick out the ANC, they're the worst.
I disagree with you.
You disagree?
Our people are not stupid.
I didn't say that.
No. I'm not saying this. I'm not saying that's what you're saying. I'm raising a very important point here, right? People who vote for the EFF know what the EFF is proposing.
Okay, but
they are voting for what we are presenting to be the alternative. They are voting for socialism. They are voting for land. They are voting for jobs.
So
they are not just replacing the ANC.
So EFF,
they are ushering in a new government
that
is going to serve them. And then we need to respect that particular thing because it's so important. We hear it every day when we go to community meetings. Old women, young people come to us and tell us, guys, we know why we're sending you there.
After the latest Kill the Boer uproar.
Yes.
Dubule Bono.
Yes.
A lot of people a lot of EFF people after that rally said, no, it's not about the Boers or the Afrikaners. It's about the enemy, the oppressor. Mm-hmm. It's, for many of us, means the ANC.
Mm-hmm.
Why then is the EFF running on it, the ANC's failing ticket, and then putting them in power in cities through coalition?
It's not the EFF that puts the ANC in power, it's the voters. The voters voted for the ANC.
Okay.
So that representation represents what the people voted for.
But the EFF chose to go into alliance/coalition.
That is what dictates. If the people want the EFF government, they must vote for an EFF government.
But once,
that is why we are even saying right now, we want 50% plus one.
Sure.
We don't want to. We don't want coalitions.
But you have a.
We want to govern the country.
Completely understand.
But the voting base dictates what must happen.
Oh no! But unfortunately,
even
get
in
50%.
Partnerships, yes. Even
which
at,
meant
but
that
that's,
there was
that's,
another option.
That's what I'm trying to.
That meant more voters didn't want
they
the
had
ANC
more voters.
Than did it.
They had more voters than the EFF.
So
we get it. And we can't miss out on an opportunity to show our people how we plan to govern when we are saying to them they must give us their trust.
But what they have
and
seen,
we have displayed that. They know the ANC already. They know the Democratic Alliance. In Mamelodi, they know what the Democratic Alliance means. In Johannesburg, they know what ANC means. In Okuruland, they know what ANC means.
Sure.
And now they know what the EFF means as well. And that's important because we're going into the national and provincial elections and we don't want to co-govern.
Okay.
We don't want coalitions. We want the whole country because we've got the plan to put our people out of and root out fundamentally poverty.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's so many things going on.
We're not the ones that tell people. We never send anybody. We've never campaigned for the ANC. We've always
I know that.
We've always sustained the message, vote for the EFF.
Okay.
Vote for the EFF.
Okay.
The electorate is what comes up with the final choice. And that is why even electorate voter education, which the IEC is failing absolutely dismally on.
The electorate does vote in that moment. And then after the votes are closed, the political parties choose how to form in case you fall below 50%.
Correct.
Or in case no one gets a majority.
Yes.
So I understand that the Moonshot Pact has basically said that's the DA and everybody have said they don't want to work with the EFF, which puts you guys in a corner. I totally get that.
And it's a beautiful corner, don't you think? Because who wants to govern with the DA?
I don't know.
Well, no,
you're saying,
I'm from Mamelodi. I'm from Mamelodi. In Mamelodi there's issues of deep internal thuggery that's going on. Water reservoirs are being closed on purpose so people can run their tenders in our communities. That's where we come from.
Okay.
That is our reality in Mamelodi. Our potholes, if your child gets inside a pothole in a township, if a child gets, they can drown if there's water in that pothole. That's our reality. We live with rubbish. We live with rubbish. You step out and it smells bad because...
Are you referring to the DA's rulership of Tshwane currently?
Yeah.
They have not been good, but the previous administration had exactly the same issues.
Yes, but that's not the EFF administration.
Okay, but the EFF
and now we're bringing in
happy
an EFF.
To work.
Not happy to work. The voter base dictates.
With.
Dan, let me tell you this.
Okay.
We have to govern at the end of the day. We're being voted in and we're represented in a council.
Okay.
We can't say because we're in a council now, the country must stop.
Okay,
the voters have said, with the majority is these people.
Mm.
Or the second is these people. The electoral base is what decides what happens politically in the country.
Okay.
And we can't dictate otherwise outside of that. We are right. This is a democratic country.
But you and the DA are definitely choosing not to work together. You and Action SA are definitely choosing not to work together.
And it's a good thing, don't you think?
This is your position, not my position. I'm not fighting for anybody.
No, we're not crying. We're not crying a river over John Stevenson. We're not. We're 10 times better, you know. At national level, our leaders are 10 times better.
So I just want
our
to ask,
manifesto is 100,000 times better.
So
not only in
to,
terms of number of how many pages we have, but the content as well.
Yeah, you guys should have printed a book.
Right?
I was reading 280 pages. I was tired. And there were pictures and color and the whole thing.
If you came to my bida, you would have gotten your copy.
280 would have been thicker than a loaf of bread. So one last thing on the job creation, because... And this actually isn't my personal comment or opinion about the EFF's policies, but the way the EFF has presented itself has caused it to be received by an admittedly white, but like powerful international business and corporate class as being of concern and a threat to business and corporate and the way things are done and international trade.
Mm.
So a lot of your guys' policies see... It would seem as though if you came to power, that would cause a lot of corporate panic and maybe even divestment from South Africa.
Wow, why do you say that? Give me more
than
that.
Because
you're opining on that, right?
No, I'm just reflecting the fact that over and over.
And I'm saying I require
business.
A background on that reflection. I need to know what is the threat.
Okay.
Because I know... Expropriation of land without compensation is not a threat.
Okay.
It is not a threat in some socialist countries as well.
But the point
I know, for example, industrialization is not a threat. And there's some form of benefit.
But then
why is
big business and capital fearful of the EFF if there's no threat?
They are not fearful of the EFF.
But then why do they keep saying that they are?
Who is saying that?
On business shows every single week.
Which businesses?
Like, every single week. For 10 years.
That it's important to say, to bring... evidence, like, because now we're just opining on things that we're catching from the air, but we've never heard the sound of discourse.
You've never heard
from the businesses itself,
business people,
from the private sector itself,
and business analysts. You've
absolutely
never
absolutely not
about it's land always expropriation.
Political, it's always political analysts.
Okay,
it's like with issues pertaining to legal matters, and you've got journalists who are presenting the position of the EFF or what this particular position in parliament means. It's not the lawyers that are speaking about what is happening in parliament.
Okay,
it's the political journalists.
Okay.
Right? So that's why I'm saying it's very important to make a distinct differentiation between when we speak about the business sector.
Sure.
Are we not speaking about people that are running a propaganda machinery?
Listen,
because there has been no tangible fear. We've engaged with the business. I think in 2018, the CIC, the commander-in-chief was at the RMB or something like that, engaging with the private sector as well. People are willing to listen to the EFF. Investors are willing to listen to the EFF because our plan works.
Sure, but let's not get confused.
Because also remember, Dan, strengthening and building capacity for the state does not mean a threat to the private sector.
Necessarily.
And if it does mean a threat to the private sector, it's a worthy threat. It's a worthy threat because the private sector operates on wanting to maximize profit.
So just to
not
be clear,
in the wellness, not with the prioritizing the wellness of our people. It's like with private hospitals as well.
Yeah.
They cater for 10% of the population, right? But they use around the same budget the public sector uses for 80% of the population.
But just to be clear, you and the EFF have, in your view, not seen any evidence that the private sector and big business is genuinely fearful of the EFF.
It's
you think
just,
it's either political analysts
it's
or you think it's by who?
It's fearmongering by the media, by you as well today.
By me? I'm allowed to ask you the questions.
But you said, because now you're not telling me which businesses are these.
Oh, I mean,
which
I
private entities are these? Now I'm sitting here and I must answer that businesses are scared of the EFF. But I don't know which, because I've never heard of the businesses that are scared of the EFF. We've encountered, we've even confronted our cliques and different entities. And there is no fear monger. They are not scared of the EFF. They know they are wrong and they correct it. We've got the labor desk. We are fighting for workers' issues on a daily basis. There's no business that's scared of the EFF. We agree in principle. That's why they're able to concede to what we're presenting to them.
Are they conceding?
They do.
Okay.
They do.
So why aren't they funding the EFF?
Are you sure?
Well, the EFF famously doesn't declare
we
who
fund
donates
ourselves.
To it.
We fund ourselves.
But then why aren't they donating to you?
They probably donate like 99,000 rand a year.
Yeah, but they're donating tens of millions to other political parties.
That's fine. I mean, everybody has that kind of choice in a democratic country.
But if they're not
to
fearful,
put their money
if big business,
where they want to.
Because remember, big business sponsors as much as it can because it tries to pick as many winners as possible.
It tries to what?
It tries to make sure
we're not trying
wins.
To be captured as well. Then also, I know, also
I know,
understand
but
that.
But let's not switch too quickly.
So now we won't dance and be happy that the Oppenheimer is giving us 15 million. They probably won't even have that opportunity to give us 15 million rand.
But just
well.
To be clear, the
because
EFF,
our party has to belong to the people.
Totally.
Yeah, and but, it does.
But the big business, you say, is so friendly and happy about the idea of the EFF, and yet they're not donating to the cause. When big business always donates to parties that they're happy with the prospect of ruling.
No.
Always.
They donate Patrice to parties Motsepe, that they can control.
Patrice Motsepe,
they
famously,
donate. You see, even that is an opinion that I don't agree with, and I can't answer it on that particular standard. They donate to political parties they can control.
Okay.
That is how Ramaphosa's presidency comes into being, through the 1 billion rand donation. And that is why he is serving the private sector.
So how does the EFF...
That is how he is serving the private sector.
But how does the
We
EFF...
are not controlled. And it's an important thing. And to note it in what it really is.
Sure.
We can't be under the control of capitalists.
I understand.
It does not make sense for a socialist party. It's called... That is the true meaning, by the way. Of political prostitution. Political prostitution is not changing your t-shirt from ANC to EFF to DA. The true meaning of political prostitution is selling activism, is selling political power.
So how is the EFF funding its enormous operation?
There's different ways. Our public reps, feed into our funds as well. We've got various programs that are running to fundraise.
Why doesn't the EFF
TG's
declare?
Office. We sell our declare what?
Their donations. The law says 100,000.
Yes, if they're under, why must we declare something that's under 100,000?
Okay, so I'm not suggesting that.
Yeah.
But in the last handful of years, the EFF has declared once.
Because now you're mentioning the law.
3.5
so now let's,
million.
If you really love the law,
because
now you're mentioning the law, Anishu, and I'm saying the law says what 100,000.
The EFF
so now if somebody donates 90,000,
I agree. And
why Malema, must you not protect the same law you're presenting to me?
And Malema has suggested donate less than 100,000, so you don't have to declare, so that there's no pushback from the ANC.
Yes, and that's fine.
I totally understand that. I just want to ask, yeah. since currently by public books, we only know that the EFF has received 3.5 million and the yeah. parties that you guys are meaningfully competing with nationally, ANC and the DA, over 120
only
million.
Only the ANC. Well,
okay, fine. Sorry. Okay. From your view, the ANC's got like 137 million rand. Yeah. How are you guys affording all the banners and the merch and the events to compete nationally?
I am telling you.
It's all under 100,000.
Our people okay. do... donate to okay. the EFF.
I hear you.
So when your party is carried by the people, it actually has more impact.
Okay.
Right?
Sure.
Because people pay 5 rand every month
sure.
for the ringtone of the EFF to ring when you call them on their cell
phones. How many people have done that?
I do not know the exact okay. numbers. Okay. I'll probably have to check with the TG.
Sure.
Right? We donate with SMSs every day.
Mm.
I do my 10 rand, 20 rand right. SMS thing almost every day with my own airtime.
Okay.
How must we declare that?
No, that's totally fine.
But now you think about it across the board. The EFF is a very big party.
To be clear, I wasn't trying to catch you out. I genuinely want to know their funding model. I want to know their funding model. I want to know your guys' funding model.
Because
if you're pulling it off, it's extraordinary.
Our people are funding the EFF because they love it so much. And that is so beautiful to see.
Mm.
To see a movement that is owned by the people
sure.
and that accounts to the people. Okay. We don't account to an entity, a single entity. We don't account to people who sit around boardrooms and discuss the direction of the country. We account to our people.
Okay.
And that is why they support each and every gathering that we have.
Right.
That is why they come out in their numbers to show force to the EFF.
I get you.
Because they know we account to them.
Okay, so let's talk about the first word in the EFF's campaign, which is land.
Yes.
So when you say that the EFF wants to take the socialist position of becoming a custodian of of South Africa's land. What do you mean by that?
We mean, okay, I'll try to simplify this as much as possible.
Yeah, I'm very simple today.
Yeah.
I have no capacity.
Keep going. So what it means is that, right, that the state becomes like the guardian of the land.
Yes.
You get what I'm saying?
I mean, the state is currently the guardian of the land.
It is not.
The state's rules and laws cover the whole course of
We're talking about land, the place where we walk on our seas and everything and all of that, right? That is, there's a high percentage, I think around 74% is owned by the white minority and the state owns 7% of land.
But they are guardians. They have legal sovereignty over which they rule.
Then are you going to let me answer the question?
Sorry, I'm just trying to understand what you mean.
I'm sure you're asking me. Let me answer you, right?
Sure.
So when the state is the custodian of the land, right, there is no private ownership of the land that is indefinite.
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
I hear you.
So if Dan comes, a young Dan from Eldos, with dreams to get into agriculture,
right,
comes to the state and says, listen here, this is my idea.
I get you.
I want to get into farming. I want to be a farmer. Right? Then the state says, okay, Dan from Eldos.
I get you.
Here is the land. Han farm op the land.
Good language switch there for Eldos.
Right? And then you go and you farm.
Mm.
But it doesn't mean now the generation after generation is going to be owning that land. Then you come back after 10 years, you're like, this is what's going on the land that you gave me. It's very successful. This is how I'm contributing to the economy. This is how it's benefiting the people. And then you say, I want to continue.
Mm.
Then we go ahead, farm on the land, right? But there is no private ownership.
Right.
That state, your land is now yours forever and ever. I mean, and you keep transferring it to your children.
Mm.
Now, if my children and your children, then if they get married and you've got big land, I've got big land, it keeps growing, it keeps growing, keeps growing. And then you find that years down the line, there's one particular family that owns more land than everybody else.
Right. Okay.
And then they're not even using it.
I hear you.
And now we want residences for our people. We want to bury our people. We can't even bury our people then. Our people have to be buried on top of each other in cemeteries. They have to be buried sitting down.
Yeah.
How do you rest in peace when you are sitting like this?
Yeah.
Your skeletons are sitting like this in the tomb.
You're right.
There's no dignity in the current setup of land ownership. And the state must be capacitated enough to be guardian and custodianship. So that's what we mean.
I hear you.
When we speak about custodianship of the land, it protects everybody.
Mm.
It protects state sovereignty as well, because you can't build up on land ownership.
Right.
And you can't target poor people, because that's what happens, right? Mm. The government gives poor people RTPs and all of those things, and the rich who want to make business in those particular townships come in, or even if they don't come in themselves, but poverty you know, forces you to sell assets that you should be keeping for a very long time.
That's true.
And then now you move from the RDP house, you go stay in a shack. Because of poverty, the indignity of it all.
Completely.
You get what I'm saying?
I do.
And there should be a protection on that particular basis, that people cannot be exploited in that particular way. And if they need particular opportunities that are accessible through land ownership and leases, then they are able to access that because the state owns the land. They don't have to go beg Van der Merwe. They don't have to go beg whoever. They don't have to just be the manual work, the manual labor on the farms of the farmers. They can themselves be the farmers and themselves. And then we also grow the agricultural base with that particular perspective. Sure. And then the industry isn't just monopolized or duopolized to a certain group of people or a certain group of elites on the side who have access to Pick and Pay and ShopRite and all of those things. We want to make the playing field more equal. We want to make it to benefit more people than it currently does. Because inequality is another thing that is going to be addressed by expropriation of land without compensation. Okay. There's a reason why they're fighting for this land.
Mm.
There's a reason why they're not giving it over so freely.
Yeah.
Because they benefit from it.
Mm. That includes big business.
Yes, they benefit. And we want that benefit to be spread across the board. We're tired of poverty. Mm. We're tired of the humiliation of being stripped of land through colonization and still being stripped of land even supposedly after colonization.
Totally.
So how did we address colonization? Mm. How did we address the laws of land the land laws of 1913 under the apartheid government if they're not being reversed through the law?
Totally. So will there be exceptions to certain kinds of land? Because, I mean, I'm just thinking maybe big business would be nervous of the EFF because they'd lose their land ownership. And
they
from
don't
their
lose.
Incentive.
They don't lose.
Okay, so are you saying that big business?
They don't lose their land.
Mm-hmm.
The state becomes custodian of all land.
Sure. And then the businesses must apply to use the land.
They are already there.
Okay.
So there will probably an audit. There will be an audit process
right.
to see how everything is going. And then obviously, because we're a very scientific party. By the way, we do things by the book.
Mm.
We consult with experts. We've got experts within our ranks. We've got PhD holders within our ranks.
Yeah, you guys are one of the
most very educated,
qualified parties. Yeah. That's true.
You never feel enough in the you graduate today and you're like, yo, I must register tomorrow.
Yeah, what if you're not a doctor yet? Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So everything is going to be done diligently and efficiently. That's how an EFF government operates.
Okay.
And we see it already.
Really?
In the places where we are MMCs. We see it with our MMCs of health who are opening mobile clinics in places that were dejected. We are seeing it with our MMCs of water and sanitation and so on and so forth, right? There should be a process that is able to audit the land of South Africa in completion.
Right.
Because the current audits that we have, the current statistics that we have, are actually very outdated.
Absolutely.
Very outdated.
I'm just trying to understand.
And they're also very regressive as well because we don't have the numbers, for example. Sorry about that. We don't have the numbers on how many black women own land.
Totally.
Right? We don't have the numbers on how many young people own land.
Sure.
We don't
and
have
it's very few.
We don't have real numbers according to the demographics that represent the politics of the country today.
Yeah. So do you think who would stand to lose their land under an EFF administration?
Why would they lose their land?
Okay, fine. Let's say EFF now just is the custodian. Nobody technically owns land anymore. They're just using it on permission of the government,
yes.
right? Which people or what kinds of people or businesses or homesteaders or farmers now would probably be told by the government, an EFF government, we want to use the land you're on for something
when they're
else.
Working the land?
I'm just...
when you apply...
Are you including historical claims from injustice?
The state will be custodian of all land.
Okay.
You, Dan, when you see in the famous words of the commander-in-chief, if you see a piece of land that you like, because the state will be custodian, you can come through.
Right. So it's empty land.
Come through.
It's empty land.
Not just empty land. There's different kinds of land. There's agricultural land. Mm. There's land that you can't use to do anything on. There's different kinds of land that can be used for different purposes.
Okay.
There's people who own too much vast land.
And they'll have lose some of it.
And they will have to share it with it because they have to. You own it with the people.
Totally. But it's only commercial enterprises. Or is it also like, is it only commercial?
The state will be custodian of all land.
Totally.
There will be no punishment system that happens.
Okay.
Where we punish people because you are on productive land and using productive land.
So if someone's that living in not, a house in a suburb.
No, okay. Why would we go to bother people of Sandton when we are building our own special economic zones?
Okay.
But we're going to build more Sandton.
Okay.
So the hub of Africa, the economics of Africa, the economy hub of Africa will not just remain Sandton forever in eternity.
Okay.
Well, we want to build special economic zones to magnify and to increase economic opportunities.
Okay. Sure.
But I need you to understand the part of the fact
no,
that
I don't understand.
The state
custodian
owns the land.
Nobody owns it. They just use it.
They use exactly.
But and then they have to reapply every now
exactly.
and again.
Exactly. We give leases.
Okay.
We do consistent
audits. There's
a lot
of power in the state to decide who has
it's
what
necessary
land.
Power.
Okay.
I'd rather the power be in the state
right.
than to be in the hands of the Oppenheimers.
Well, I mean, that's not necessarily the choice.
I'm saying to you, me.
Okay.
I would rather.
Okay.
As a young black South African, okay. I'm saying I put my trust in the state more than I would in the private sector. Because I've seen how the private sector encounters people like me.
Right.
We approach it each and every day with worker issues. We approach it each and every day with health issues. We approach it each and every day with the positionality of women in this country.
Sure.
Because there's a hierarchy system that capitalism creates that's based on racism and patriarchy. And the people who suffer the wrath of that particular system is people who look like me.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I would rather a socialist state be custodian of the land.
And it's of course
than Dan and his friends. Yes.
I don't want to be the custodian of the land.
And under an MF government, I, me and you will be the same. Nice, ne?
So it's the end of the Ingonyama Trust also.
Yeah. No? Pardon?
It would be the end of the Ingonyama
but
Trust.
But the EFF has said on so many occasions, right? The state is the custodianship.
Totally.
We're not ending any organization.
Okay. So the Ingonyama Trust could apply to keep
it
the same.
We're not stopping anyone from existing. We're not closing doors for anyone.
Right, okay.
The state is just the custodian of the land.
Okay, I hear you. Got it.
Ne?
I got it.
Yeah. We're not shutting down anyone. We're not seizing existence of different people and different groups. In fact, the EFF is working very closely to traditional officers and chiefs in the country. I don't know if you've noticed that. We have very close relations because we acknowledge and we respect culture.
Got it.
We acknowledge and respect the leadership component of traditional leaders. It's very important in maintaining the moral fiber of our society. They are very important in the discourse of the day because we can't neglect our own and maintain the Dutch Roman law upon to oversee the issues of the country, to oversee the moral fiber of the country while we denigrate our own.
Sure.
They exist for a reason. The people know why they respect and they know why they are able to respond on command to their chiefs and to their traditional leaders. And even as the EFF, we also subscribe and we are working with them through respect and acknowledgement, through humility as well.
Okay.
Because we acknowledge their role in society.
Sure.
We acknowledge their role in our communities. Mm. Yeah.
So the EFF was lauded for many years for a pan-Africanist politic. Being that we need to rise up, we need to raise up the whole continent, help it to overcome centuries of evil, generally white European colonial practice, and that is a project that the EFF really cares about.
Yeah.
But now in 2024, there's this interesting moment where orchestrated campaigns plus genuine fears of foreigners taking jobs and taking communities and being criminals or whatever have meant that there's quite a xenophobic energy in South African politics right now. And there are a lot of political parties who are essentially running on close the borders, kick the foreigners out. Where does the EFF stand?
The EFF is very clear, shame on that particular thing. We want trade on the African continent to happen very freely. It's going to boost our economy. It's going to boost the economy of other African countries. We want other entities to be able to exist and coexist in different African countries as well.
Right.
For intra-trade to be able to happen successfully and efficiently as well. That benefits each and every African country.
Mm-hmm.
So now obviously the EFF can come in and become government and dictate to other African countries how they are going to run their affairs.
Sure.
It's a long process of consultation. It's a process of agreements, of negotiation, of how these trades are going to be happening intercontinentally. But that is our position because we know that is how it's going to benefit the country. I mean, nobody asked the EU why they have open borders and how that benefits their economy.
So,
of which it does.
Sure.
Intercontinental trade does boost the economy of a continent. So what in terms of travel and tourism and even the moving of goods as well. It's not just the moving of people that we're talking about. We're talking about the move of goods as well. So if there's somebody who's in Botswana who's selling there and they want to also be able to get into South Africa, and we've got our own business people who want and have the aspirations of selling intercontinentally of as course. Well, who can't particularly get into that space because the laws are much harder for us in Africa than they are from the people in China, than they are from the people in America.
So beyond trade, what would this mean for are any migrants allowed to come into South Africa basically so long as they go through a border gate?
That's normal way of running a country.
Okay.
Right? We're not nitini. The systemic way of running the country, of acknowledging ports, is not what is being spoken to here. We're talking about ease of entering a country and fixing the legality system that pertains to it.
So would you guys do for example,
we've got issues currently, right, of professionals who are in even the scarce industries, like the industry that need, I forgot the term, that relates to...
They're like qualifications lacking or like professional skills lacking?
That one, I'm sure we're on the same page.
Scarce. We don't have enough.
Yes, gotcha. And then we get people from outside, right? And they have to go through... There's so many of them who currently can't even fix their papers because Home Affairs as a system...
Okay, I understand.
...is on its knees. So much of illegality, by the way, is not an issue of people not wanting to be legal.
It's Home Affairs.
It's an issue of Home Affairs as a system being put to the ground.
I hear you.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's important to acknowledge issues around the fear-mongering with what's happening in the continent, what's happening in South Africa, to be able to place them where they belong.
Mm.
So even issues of crime, we're talking about the fact that the policing system is bettered.
I agree.
Not even in the case of just foreign nationals. Even in the case of South Africans themselves.
Agreed.
You can be sexually assaulted today. Ulinduzufe to get justice. 2% of people who open sexual assault cases, only 2% conviction suffices in this country.
Yeah.
Even issues like menial issues, like maintenance issues, like parental justice, right? Those cases get heaps and heaps and heaps of documents in those offices and nothing happens. We're talking about a systemic issue that fundamentally has to be changed. But obviously it is convenient for the government of the day to be able to build in towards this particular fear-mongering because it serves their interests.
Yeah, because they get
so it makes sense for Aaron Motsoaledi to pretend that he's trying to get rid of the foreigners
then
change tune 15 months later when nobody's watching because he knows the problem is him.
Okay.
So he'll get the work to get the people talking, get all the PR people, put them in a room, do a presser. Mm. Yeah, we're doing this today. 6 months later, he releases a very short statement.
Mm.
We're no longer going to court.
Okay.
Because we have to fix our systems.
Yeah, it's performance politics.
That is what happens.
Okay.
That is what happens.
Sure.
And people in power continue to go on unscathed because we're not willing enough to insert ourselves and to truly analyze what is happening in the departments they are leading.
Sure.
Bekicela should be able to tell us why they are not able to keep the people they arrest. And if he comes out, because he's come out and said, no, sometimes you arrest them. But the justice and correctional services system is the one that's flawed.
Sure.
Because the court systems, we arrest the GBV perpetrator, we take them to court, they give him bail, we can't find him anymore.
Yeah.
So it then becomes a regressive, cycle. Then we must go into Ronald Lamola and say, Ronald Lamola, since you talk so much, tell us why you keep giving people bail, despite bills coming in and out to say that vicious crimes, especially GBV crimes, should not be getting bail. Why do you keep giving them bail?
I hear you.
And what are the consequences? Why are cases of maintenance taking 2 years, 3 years for them to be finalized?
Mm.
Why are you not being creative? Because, for instance, in Gauteng, with the EFF Gauteng, part of our manifesto is that we'll be doing stop and goes. Like, you see checks. You know how the traffic cops will check for your disc?
Yes, I do.
But they can't do checks to check if you are wanted on the roll of maintenance orders.
Sure.
To institute maintenance orders.
I get you.
There is no innovation around that because there is no interest in that. Political will can solve so many problems.
I hear you.
Well, what we lack is political will. Maybe they are tired.
Maybe they are.
It's possible because they are old, right? And I'm not applying ageism here. I respect old people. Right. But I really do think Congolese people are tired. they are tired and they are resigning one by one. But you see that maybe, I don't know, maybe they are keeping secrets among themselves. They think if we get in, then the books will be opened. They must take those books and go with their secrets and stay at home, okay, because they are tired. Even their demeanor is tired. Even in parliamentary commissions, they are tired. They are tired everywhere. They are tired in legislatures. Even the young ones of Kongolosi are tired. So maybe it's the whole institution that just needs to take a break, because now we're all lagging behind because Kongolosi is tired. And we're here. We're here, we're energetic, we're creative, we're innovative, and we're committed to this country.
So, Naledi Chirwa, thank you. This has been fascinating. What is a successful result for the EFF in Gauteng in 2024? I think you guys got 14.69%
In
2019, to make you the third biggest party in Gauteng. What would a successful percentage be?
We're taking the elections. We're taking the country, we're taking the province.
So, hold on, in 2024?
Yes.
So anything short of 50% plus one would be a failure.
We're taking 50%. There's no failure because if you grow, it's growth.
Okay, so growth is success.
But growth is definitely success.
Okay.
Growth is success.
Is 0.1% growth?
Let's be fair. Let's be fair on that one.
A successful,
It's growth. It's growth. I mean, we're not going to grow by 0.1, and I'm not being boastful about this, right? We're putting in the work, and we're trusting the electorate to be able to make the best decision in their own interest. This is not even a boastful comment. It really is. The time is now. We want economic freedom in our lifetime.
Sure.
And we've got a chance to make it happen. Like, we've got a chance. There's 14 million young people who are eligible to vote. The ANC got 10 million votes in the previous elections, national elections. We can make it happen.
Mm.
It's tangible. It's well within our hands.
So 20% would be good?
My brother, 50% plus one. 50% plus one.
Okay.
On the child, morning.
Gauteng and nationally.
We're ready as a country. Okay. We're ready. The systems are in place.
Mm.
The EFF organizationally is strong enough. We have demonstrated that particular strength in different provinces, in different regions, in districts. There's an EFF organization in all the branches, in all the wards.
Sure.
We demonstrate that kind of power even through programs like voter registration. In every ward, you will see an EFF table. You will see EFF activists who are there. That is demonstration of organizational growth. That is demonstration of organizational capacity. The threat is wanting to vote nationally a party that has 10 people. Because where must they get the people to now be able to further their aspirations?
About MK, Zuma.
I'm talking about everybody who's not the EFF. I'm talking about everybody who's not the EFF.
I get you.
We've put in the work over the years. We've been in existence for 10 years, going on 11.
Mm.
We've put in the work. We've put in the work. We've put in the work. And it's time to make it happen.
So, that's it. What did you think? You can let us know in the comments or on any of the social medias. That is our exclusive interview with Naledi Chirwa from the Economic Freedom Fighters. And this is The Issue with Dan Corder. Thank you so much again for your kind attention. Remember to go check out our Patreon. We've got a fascinating new interview up with Youth Capital, which is a research unit which has discovered some really awful, but it's important research, important facts, some awful realities about being unemployed and trying to seek work in South Africa, how much it costs unemployed, desperate, particularly young South Africans, and how they sometimes even need to choose between buying food for themselves and seeking employment. It's a crucial conversation based on vital research that Youth Capital has done, and it's available on Patreon for our subscribers. Remember, less than 100 rand a month makes you a subscriber, and then you get weekly expert interview exclusives with a variety of wonderful people who know a ton about the big things going on in South Africa. Otherwise, chat to you in a few days. Thank you for listening.